Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. These are the stories coming up on today's program. On the road to Damascus, during his general audience today, Pope Benedict speaks about the dramatic account of St. Paul's conversion and how he became a zealous evangeliser. Unwanted daughters. Millions of baby girls are going missing in India due to the growing trend to abort female fetuses there as a result of the traditional preference for a boy. And miracle daughter. Ahead of Pope Benedict's scheduled visit to the Marian Shrine at Lourdes, I speak to a father about his newborn daughter's miraculous recovery following a pilgrimage to Lourdes by him and his pregnant wife. During his weekly general audience today, Pope Benedict spoke about the dramatic account of St. Paul's conversion on the road to Damascus and how he became a zealous evangeliser. Lydia Kane reports.
Pope Benedict flew by helicopter from the papal summer retreat at Castel Gandolfo to join the many thousands of pilgrims in the Paul VI Hall who had gathered for his weekly general audience. This week, the Holy Father continued his catechesis on St. Paul, whose year is being celebrated, focusing on his conversion on the road to Damascus.
In the Acts of the Apostles, St. Luke recounts for us a dramatic episode on the road to Damascus, which transformed Paul from a fierce persecutor of the church into a zealous evangelizer. In his own letters, Paul describes his experience not so much in terms of a conversion, but as a call to apostleship and a commission to preach the gospel. In the first instance, this was an encounter not with concepts or ideas, but with the person of Jesus himself. In fact, Paul met not only the historical Jesus of the past, but the living Christ who revealed himself as the one Savior and Lord.
The Pope, while speaking on the figure of St. Paul, noted that Christianity is not a new philosophy or a new morality, but an encounter with God.
Similarly, the ultimate source of our own conversion lies neither in esoteric philosophical theories, nor abstract moral codes, but in Christ and his gospel. He alone defines our identity as Christians, since in him we discover the ultimate meaning of our lives. Paul, because Christ had made him his own, could not help but preach the good news he had received. So it is with us. Transfixed by the greatness of our Savior, we, like St. Paul, cannot help but speak of him to others. May we always do so with joyful conviction.
One of those who was at Wednesday's audience was Father George Summit from Ontario in Canada, who spoke of his delight at Pope Benedict's forthcoming visit to Lourdes.
It's very appropriate, very good, I think, that Pope Benedict is visiting Lourdes at this time, because again, he's the Pope that is bringing hope. He's the Pope who is bringing much healing, not just in the body, but also in the soul.
At the end of his audience, Pope Benedict left the Vatican to return to Castel Gandolfo. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
In India, becoming pregnant with a baby girl can have fatal consequences. Such is the traditional preference for a boy that millions of female fetuses are being aborted, and the number is rising each year. Some commentators have called it a silent but massive suppression of human life on a scale that is almost akin to genocide. Girls in India are often viewed as a burden, not least because tradition demands that a girl's family provide a dowry for their daughter's marriage, a practice that continues today even though dowries have been ruled illegal. Another factor that helps explain why so many unborn baby girls are not living to see the light of day is the growing use of sex determination scans for pregnant women. Here again, the practice is illegal, but the law is widely flouted. Often when the parents discover through the scan that their unborn child is a girl rather than the longed-for boy, the decision is taken to abort the fetus. As a result of this growing trend to abort the female child, the ratio of girls to boys is dropping rapidly throughout India. In 1991, there were 945 females to 1,000 males. But 10 years later, that had dropped to just 927 females. And in some states, such as Punjab, the number of females being born compared to males is dramatically lower. The Catholic Church in India has spoken out strongly against the practice of female feticide and has earmarked the 8th of September as Girl Child Day to help persuade parents of the equal worth and dignity of both boys and girls. The Church says girls are not just being selectively killed in the womb in India, but in some extreme cases are left to die after birth. In addition, girls are often neglected or mistreated throughout their childhood and then by their husband's family when they marry. Cardinal Oswald Gracious is the Archbishop of Bombay and the President of the Indian Catholic Bishops' Conference. He calls the selective abortion of baby girls in the womb a diabolical practice.
I think it's because of the whole idea that the girl is a second-class citizen. We are trying to fight against that forcefully. You see, traditionally, a girl in many places was considered a burden, partly sociologically because economically she had later on take dowry, etc. Therefore, families did not consider it a blessing when a daughter was born, but it was a blessing when a son was born. Now, with the possibility of determining the sex of the fetus, people have got into the idea of female feticide. And this, as you can see, is diabolical because it's not only taking life, but also taking life selectively of women.
Cardinal Gracious went on to tell me more about the Church's role in trying to change the discrimination and prejudice against women.
The Church has so clearly spoken over and over again against abortion, and the Church is known to have very strongly pro-life. Now, combined with this, there's also this question of now the Church's effort to try to give women their rightful place in society. As a matter of fact, for our last plenary assembly of the conference, we took the mission of the women in the Church and society as a theme of our conference. We discussed about women's role in Church and society, and the idea was to make sure that they get their rightful place. In many parts of the country, especially in the north, we try through our animation programs also to assist the non-Christians also to be able to see the value of women. And I want to say this is getting very effective in places where we've had programs which are systematically carried out in different villages. Women are being able to see the importance of women in the role in society. And I think so gradually there could be a change in the mentality. But this would take time.
But how many baby girls are being aborted each year in India? And where is the practice most common? Well, to find out more, I spoke to Sister Lily Francis, who heads the Catholic Bishops' Commission for Women and Children.
Around 500,000 female fetuses are aborted every year.
And where is the practice most prevalent?
It is practiced in Punjab. For every 1,000 boy children, they have only 300 girl children in some part of Punjab. But even Delhi, it is affected. Delhi ratio, as per the census, 808 girls for 1,000 boys. Also, we see the third child in the family, usually the ratio goes much, much low, 312 girls for 1,000 boys.
So in many areas of India, there's now a very distorted ratio and a glut of boys in a way.
Yes, yes.
Maria George Loy is a Catholic sociology student in New Delhi who has done research into the practice of female feticide. She spoke to me about the widespread bias and discrimination against females in Indian society that help explain this growing trend to abort baby girls.
I think the reason why it is increasing is that women are constantly being considered as a liability in India because of factors such as dowry. And women are considered as a liability because of the dowry amount that has to be paid when they get married. And because they are getting married to a family that is outside, the woman does not prove as an asset to her own family in which she was born.
Loy says, contrary to what some might think, these discriminatory attitudes against girls are inculcated in both men and women and cut across all ethnic and social groups.
I think it is widely prevalent in all the classes. It is prevalent in the high classes, maybe because they'll have to give a high amount of dowry when she gets married. And it may be due to in the low class families because they cannot afford to give a big amount when she is getting married. And it is widely prevalent across all the ethnic groups.
Experts say that although Indians know that female feticide is being widely practiced, thanks to the growing availability of sex selection scans, people don't like talking about it openly. And in many of these cases, the pregnant woman is being forced against her will to abort her unborn baby girl because of pressure from her husband and his family. There are some cases where the pregnant woman will rebel against this pressure to abort her baby girl. But as Loy explains, when women do this, they run a serious risk of being badly beaten by either her husband or his family.
Women, when they rebel, they are battered, they are pushed and they are kicked so that the child somehow is aborted.
So you're saying that if the woman does not agree, violence is likely to be used against her?
Yeah, if she opposes that, yes, I will have my child against the wishes of the family, she is battered. Many succumb to the pressure, and even if the child is allowed to live, she is not looked after properly by the in-laws, or the woman is not encouraged enough to educate the child, or she's not given the means to educate the child or to look after her properly.
Sister Lily has found, through the women that she comes into contact with, that often they would like to proceed with their pregnancy, but are forced to abort because of the pressure from their in-laws.
I travel around the country, conduct awareness program for the women. I found that nearly all the women, they would like to have more children. And when it is a female fetus is in their womb, they would like to keep it. Or the women who have come to me when they are in pregnancy, they would like to continue their pregnancy, either a girl or a boy. They have no differences. The differences comes from the pressure which is given by the family members or the neighborhood due to financial constraints.
Sister Lily told me about one incident where she successfully managed to persuade her husband not to force his wife to have an abortion. The couple in question already had two girls, and the husband wanted his wife to terminate her pregnancy after they discovered via a scan that she was expecting a third girl. Let's hear more about this particular case.
I remember once, 2 years back, a lady came to me telling that I'm pregnant with a girl child. She would like to continue, but her in-laws, father-in-law, mother-in-law, wife, husband, they want to abort the girl child. Anyway, somehow I could influence that family and they could have it, the third girl child.
You're saying that in that case, you were able to persuade the family for the woman to keep her, the girl child she was carrying in her womb?
Yes, I could persuade it, and they were happy afterwards because they lost the two previous children, their elder children. They both died in a flood accident.
Despite the worrying statistics, Cardinal Gracious says he hopes the trend towards aborting more and more female fetuses will diminish eventually, as people come to realise the implications of this practice.
I think that as people get more educated, as people get more enlightened, as people the world is becoming more and more a little village, people see the role of women in society, I am hopeful that this trend will gradually begin to diminish, and I hope it will die out completely.
There's a saying in Indian society that raising a girl is like watering a plant in your neighbour's garden. With attitudes like this, there's little wonder that so many females in India are being denied the right to be born. But as Loy reminds us, it's difficult to change deeply rooted attitudes and traditions in a hurry. Happily, as Loy herself made clear, she does not share the bias against female children felt by so many of her compatriots.
Let's end with her views.
This attitude does prevail, and I think it has nothing to do with education as such. It is a mindset that has been inculcated in the people, something which is widely said around, that the girl child is a liability to the family.
Are you married?
No, I'm not married.
But when you say were to get married, I assume that you would be fighting very strongly for the right for any girl child that you were carrying to be allowed the right to be born.
Yes, definitely. I would love to have a lot of girl children, and I will definitely fight for her rights.
I was speaking there to Maria Loy from Delhi, and you earlier heard the voices of Cardinal Gracius, Archbishop of Bombay, and Sister Lily Francis. Benedict is due to visit the world-famous Marian Shrine at Lourdes in southwest France later on this month. Nearly 6 million pilgrims each year visit the shrine at Lourdes, where Our Lady appeared 18 times to a local peasant girl in 1858. Lourdes is renowned as a site for healing miracles and has more than 7,000 cures to its credit, although only around 67 of them are deemed miracles by the shrine's medical committee. Among those many millions of people throughout the world who have made the pilgrimage to Lourdes is a couple in England who are convinced that their 4-year-old daughter is a Lourdes miracle and would not be alive today if they hadn't gone to the shrine. I've been finding out more about their dramatic and heartwarming story. The husband's name is Paul Wood. Born in Scotland, he's a Catholic living in the city of Bristol, and who, together with his pregnant wife Sarah, went on their first pilgrimage to Lourdes in 2002. Their pilgrimage took place after the couple had recently suffered the tragedy of seeing their second child die shortly after birth because of an untreatable genetic disorder. Doctors had told Paul and his wife that they had a 1-in-4 chance of having another child with the same disorder because they both carried the recessive gene. Paul began by telling me about their decision to go to Lourdes when Sarah became pregnant with their third child.
The tempest rages round thee, she will calm the troubled sea. Gifts of heaven.
We went to Lourdes at that point because we had been told by the medical profession that there was nothing that they could do to test the child when the child was either in the womb or when the child was first born. The first test that could be done was when the child was 12 hours old. So therefore, the only thing we could really do, through my belief system, was go to Lourdes for some form of divine intervention.
Because you've been told that there was a 1-in-4 chance that this child could have the same untreatable genetic condition.
Yes, and it is completely untreatable. There's nothing that, if they had detected the daughter had died's condition when, say, she was a few hours old, they would have been able to do nothing about it anyway.
OK, so you went to Lourdes. What was the atmosphere like there? I mean, what were your feelings as you spent some time at this Marian Shrine?
When we went to Lourdes, we actually went with the HCPT, which is the Handicapped Children Pilgrimage Trust, Group 37, which is our local group. And therefore, there was 20 adults and 20 children, roughly. That were there in amongst a group of 500,000 ACPT delegates. And the atmosphere, as soon as you got there, you could just, in the shrine itself, in the shrine area, it was just complete silence, whereas every place else was quite loud, as you can imagine, with that number of children around. When you actually got into the shrine area, it was a very difficult thing to describe. It was very tranquil, is the best way to put it. The candles that are lit along the shrine sort of sum it up, you know, as the how sort of tranquil it is in there.
Was it in some ways a humbling experience or a very deeply spiritual experience? What thoughts were going through your mind as you were there in front of the shrine?
The main thought was if how do you put this subtly? If God exists, it's the one place on earth that he definitely would be.
And the other people that were there at Lourdes, I mean, there's some people there who are very seriously ill. How did it make you feel? Did it make you feel grateful?
I think the miracle of Lourdes, I would say if people go to Lourdes expecting the death of God in a wheelchair and expect to walk back, that's not what I would say is a real miracle of Lourdes. A real miracle of Lourdes is that you actually see a lot of people with worse conditions than yourself or with worse problems than yourself. And that's the real miracle of Lourdes, is actually you put your own life in perspective when you're there.
Nonetheless, when you went there, you were obviously, as you said, hoping for divine intervention, hoping that this child that your wife was carrying would not have this same untreatable genetic condition. And yet, when she was born, you had some very dramatic news, didn't you? I mean, tell us exactly what happens.
We were told when Imogen was 3 days old, which was a Friday afternoon, that she would not live for the rest of the weekend. We were told to take an envelope, which we read about 6 months later, to take an envelope with a letter in it and give it to the ambulance driver when Imogen died. The envelope actually, when we opened it, like I say, it was about 6 months later, had a statement in it that this child has just died from an untreatable genetic condition.
So the doctors were totally certain, beyond any manner of doubt, that Imogen was going to die?
Without any doubt at all, yes.
And what were your thoughts at this time?
My first statement to the specialist who told me that was, I don't believe you. It's just something told me that what they were telling me was untrue.
And did your wife share your optimism and your feeling of hope at this time?
I think to define it as a feeling of hope is maybe pushing a bit too far. We were obviously exceptionally upset. You know, this was not what we were expecting for news. But just from spending time with the daughter who died, you could see she was quite listless. You could see she wasn't, her breathing was quite heavy, for example, which was all signs of the condition, as it turned out was the case. Imogen wasn't exhibiting any of this. All that the doctors had was this blood test, which suggested that she had this problem.
And the blood test, I mean, that they had run, as far as the doctors are concerned, it was accurate. There was no doubt that they'd made a mistake. It was definitely certain.
It was certain. The specialist's advice was take your child home, spend some time with her, and call ambulance, not immediately when she dies, but take your time, and then call ambulance sometime after she dies. That was the specialist's advice. When I suggested that if she was still here on the Monday, I mean, this was a Friday, will we bring her back in and have her retested? The advice was she will not be alive at that point in time. She will definitely be dead.
Call her mother, call her virgin, happy mother.
So you took her home, and as we now know, she survived the weekend. So you took her back to the hospital, I gather, on the Monday, still alive.
Yeah.
What was the reaction? Can you tell us a little bit there, how the specialist and the doctors reacted?
The specialist was quite visibly shocked. He obviously didn't want Imogen to die. At no point in time did he want that to happen, but he was quite visibly shocked that the test results that he had suggested she would be dead, and she wasn't. So he redid the test, and it was the same result again. When I suggested, once again, will I bring her back in if she's still alive on Wednesday, he reassured me once again that she would not be alive by Wednesday.
But she was, wasn't she? Tell us more.
Yes. My wife and myself took her back in on Wednesday morning. The specialist was, again, visibly shocked. He re-ran the test, and the test result had halved, which basically meant the test result was a reading of the lactic acid levels within the body. And that had gone down and reduced it to half the previous results, which suggested that actually Imogen was fine. And it was something that they could not, and they still cannot, explain. On the Friday and the Monday, they ran the tests. The test results were so high, and they had halved by the Wednesday. Medical science cannot explain why that's actually happened.
And did the test then at that point stay low, and she just continued to grow and thrive?
We were told that when the lactic acid levels reduced to below 2, whatever it was, within a litre, that the results would not go up again. For you or I, it would go, if we go to the gym or go for a swim or some form of exercise, your lactic acid levels will go up. And the same thing will happen with Imogen, but it won't. It suggests that everything was fine at that point in time.
So as far as you and your wife are concerned, this was a miracle that was wrought at Lourdes.
Yes, yes. I would say certainly that Imogen is a miracle. I think no matter what somebody chooses to believe, if it's a miracle or not, it still gives people hope, which I think is key to this. Medically, an explanation cannot be given. Therefore, the only explanation to draw is that Imogen is indeed a miracle.
And what about the specialist who you dealt with at this period? Was he afterwards convinced that it was a miracle? Was he maintaining to the end that it was just some inexplicable change of her condition?
I didn't go into details with the specialist then. Actually, to be fair, now, he was in tears with the result. He was overjoyed, and visibly overjoyed, because obviously he didn't want Imogen to die. So he was very pleased. He didn't try to give an explanation. He just says, I don't understand how medically this is possible. And I didn't go into detail with him as to what his belief system was or what he thought it was. We were just so overjoyed that we've been told that Imogen was fine.
And she's continued fine to this day then?
She's continued fine to this day. She is close to her fifth birthday now, and she is visibly fine, no problems at all. She appears to be a very intelligent, very bright child.
And has she been told about what happened to her, and what are her thoughts about it? Has she made any comments?
She has been told. We take her to her sister's grave every week. It's worth pointing out that actually we have had four children. Three of them are perfectly healthy. Cameron Victoria, who's a child who died, was our second child. We've had two children since.
One of which, of course, was Imogen.
One of which was Imogen, yes. Our oldest daughter, who is nine, who's 9 years old now, she is fine. We didn't realise we were carriers of the genetic condition at that point in time. We then had Cameron Victoria, who would have been six and a half now. We then had Imogen, and we then had Samuel, who is two.
So, anyhow, Imogen is your miracle baby, and you went back to Lourdes, though, after this, didn't you? Did you go back to give thanks, or what was the reason why you went back the second time?
We booked a holiday in Lourdes to give thanks for Imogen. And by the time we got there, my wife was 6 weeks pregnant again. Just coincidentally, the same amount of pregnancy had gone by. We had booked the holiday 3 months beforehand. So we went along, obviously, firstly to say thanks for Imogen, and secondly to say, can we hope this child's fine?
And Samuel was fine.
And Samuel was fine. They actually, it was the same specialist, and he didn't test Samuel till he was 5 days old, because we had such a trauma, and as we've explained through this interview, with Imogen. By the time Imogen was given all clear, she was 8 days old. So we thought, well, why have that over this time? If they tell us that Samuel's got the same condition, there's nothing we can do about it anyway. So we waited until he was 5 days old and got the test done. And he was fine with the first time they did the test.
So everybody considers Imogen your miracle baby, and you very much put this down to the fact that you went on that pilgrimage to Lourdes.
Yes, I would say 100% linked to the pilgrimage to Lourdes.
Daily, sing to Mary, sing my soul the praises to the
I was speaking there to Paul Wood from Bristol in England. Well, that's all for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.